Let's bring the great Chris Lowe in here. It's now time for the SEC in Focus with the great Chris Lowe, presented by your friends and my friends at your Campbell Cunningham Laser Center. 588 eyes. It was a marvelous thing they did for me back in 1998, and I haven't looked back. All I've done since then is I've gotten a lot better looking. I've lost all my hair. I'm in the process of losing my eyebrows. Chris Lowe, I haven't seen you in a while. You're going to love my new look, though, brah. I look like an old wrestler from the early 90s. Remember those really bad gimmicks they used to have? Except I'm living the gimmick every day, CeeLo. Do you have a thought on that?
You know what, though? Your kids and your wife make up for it. They're all really nice-looking people. So there you go.
That's it. Yeah, and you know what? When you're married 20 years, one thing about it, bro, I told my wife this. I said, you're stuck with me, and I don't care how I look. So get you some of that. But let's talk here, C. First of all, I want to remind you, Campbell Cunningham Laser Center, part of an ophthalmology practice serving Knoxville for over 55 years. 55 years. And you need to call them at 588-EYES and find out more about LASIK surgery, which has come such a long way since I had it. And I am thrilled to death with the results I had and have had 13 years ago. Chris, some news breaking around the league as we get to some of the stuff that's going on in the league. There is actually some news going on in the SEC on the football side of things. First of all, what do you make about not Maryland, but the ACC filing a complaint against Vanderbilt? This Franklin guy is stirring people up, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I talked to some people about that yesterday. It sounds like it's not so much Edsel that's driving that train, but the AD there at Maryland. I don't think it's real, I don't know if you want to go at Franklin. I mean, because, you know, he's the one that sort of, you know, they made that decision not to sort of keep him, you know, after the whole freezing thing. I don't know if there's what you would call bad blood there, but it sounds like that's where it's coming from. I don't know that Edsel really is real gung-ho one way or the other about that. It sounds like it's the AD at Maryland that wants to see this thing through. We'll see if it has any legs. You know, I'll say this. I mean, he's right. James is right about coaches keeping in contact with players they coach. I mean, everybody does it. You know, Trooper Taylor did it. T. Martin did it. You know, when you recruit a kid and coach him, especially if he's a guy that you're his position coach and you're with him all the time, you're going to maintain that relationship in some way, shape, or form. Now, that doesn't mean you can tamper with him and call him and tell him, hey, it's not working out for you there. We'd love to have you at Vanderbilt. Now, that's sort of got to be proven. Someone's going to have to drop a dime on Franklin that he did that, and I'm not sure that's going to be easy to do.
Well, that's right. I mean, what are you going to get, one of those kids to talk? I mean, let's think about that. Is that
now, remember, there's really nothing. When I say we, Tennessee, and I was checking on it, sort of went through this a little bit with Kiffin back when he actually came out and said that he had called Alshon Jeffrey during the whole gas pumping comment. And I remember he told me that. And he said, you know, Jeffrey said he didn't say that. And I said, Lane, did you call Jeffrey? And he said, yeah, well, and he sort of started to back off a little bit. Well, as I started to investigate that, you know, there's nothing that says technically that you can't call those kids or you can't be in touch with them. You just can't be calling them to recruit them, you know, or bring them to your school is what they're going to crack down on you about. Now, there may be some minor type deal there that you're breaking, but it's not certainly not a major issue unless you're trying to recruit them to your school.
Chris, what could they, let's say the ACC and the AD there at Maryland, let's say this guy really is a snake and they have proof, and let's say it was a sloppy snake and they get him. What then? Do they bar that kid from going there? What happens?
Oh, I think so. I think definitely then, if they proved that Franklin was tampering, I think definitely that kid would not be able to go to play at Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt would be, I think there would be some type of punishment, penalty, sanction placed upon Vanderbilt and Franklin if they prove that that's the case, and there's some type of tampering that, that took place.
What? Talk to me here about Franklin. What's the heat there between? Because he was he not in line to get that Maryland job at one time? And what
yeah, remember
there?
he was actually I think the coach in waiting. I think he had that title or something similar to that. And then it sort of soured with Friesen and they you know pushed him out, and I think that the writing was sort of on the wall for Franklin, and he was getting some interest at other places. And then Vanderbilt comes along and offers him the head job, and you know he's out of there. So I don't know that push come to shove, if we ever got that opportunity. It sounds like he probably wouldn't have at Maryland the way it all went down. But you know, most people I talk to there speak you know very highly of what the job he did. You know, sort of around the offensive side of the ball and some of the things that Maryland did, the O'Brien kid, and remember the guy that he brought in as his offensive coordinator called the plays in that last bowl game where they exploded and scored all those points and generated all those yards. So I think Franklin was a guy that was going to get a shot somewhere. Somebody was going to give him a shot as a head coach, and Vanderbilt did. Here's the funny thing is, you know, Vanderbilt's never going to release how much it's paying its coaches, the private institution. They don't have to. But in talking to some people over there that I trust, you know, he's making now with his new gig and his new deal. They just gave him a new deal, new raise, everything. And part of that agreement is that they're going to spruce up facilities significantly, you know, with a Jumbotron indoor practice facility. They're going to be redoing the field, do some things to the McGugan Center there to make it more player friendly. But his monetary package is now right there close, Tony, to $3 million. Did you ever think you'd see the day where Vanderbilt was paying its head football coach more than Tennessee?
Are you kidding me?
No, it's somewhere close. I was told closer to $3 million than it is $2.5 million. And I think Derek last year was at around $2.2.
That punk is making... That guy's making $3 million a year. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
That is classic, as we visit today with Chris Lowe on the show. And you know what's funny, Chris, is that people really speak out of school when they say, well, he's not going to be there long term. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't he be there? If he's making that kind of money, now that you say that, why wouldn't he be there long term?
Yes.
What's
you know what Franklin is, and I mean this in a complimentary way for both guys, he's sort of Vanderbilt's version of Bruce Pearl. I mean, when Pearl was at Tennessee and he was stirring it up and he came in right away and sort of made an impact, everybody outside the league, I mean, everybody, other coaches, other fans, they couldn't stand him. You know, Tennessee loved him. He was Tennessee's coach. He took a program, a basketball program that had been, you know, the bottom of the barrel, and he all of a sudden made it relevant. You know, and had people talking about it, and it wasn't afraid to sort of jump out there and stir it up. Franklin's done the same thing. Now, you know, in his first year, he didn't go, well, he went to a bowl game. I guess that's sort of the equivalent of going to the NCAA tournament, and he certainly has to sustain that, which is going to be very difficult at Vanderbilt. But, you know, you talk to people outside Vanderbilt, you know, whether it's the Georgia fans, the Tennessee fans, other coaches, yeah, they're not the biggest James Franklin fans. So the same way as it was with Pearl. But you talk to the Vanderbilt people, they love him. They feel like
I love
it's exactly
him.
What they needed.
I love him because I see Bruce Pearl. People rip me. I said on my blog today, if you're going to go to Vanderbilt and you're going to succeed, the only way you're going to succeed, if you're going to go to Tennessee basketball, when Pearl got here, and you're going to move the dial, you've got to be polarizing. You've got to be different. You've got to try and create some heat. Let's talk. What did Stokum and those folks do to Tennessee? What did they say to Tennessee and NC State by moving them to Friday, Chris? And did that surprise you?
Well, no, because somebody was going to have to play. There was some talk they were going to play it maybe on on Monday, go Saturday, Monday, and they decided not to do that. They couldn't play. There was something else down there on, there was something that prevented it from playing on Sunday, and I think Thursday. So, yeah, I don't like, and this is not directed at the Chick-fil-A people, or Tennessee, or anybody else for that matter. I just don't like college football, period, being played on Friday. To me, that's the high school night. That's the night we all know the high school football is played, especially here in the South, and it's such an important part of our fabric, you know, especially in small towns. And I just hate to see college football games, period, played on Friday night and going against the high school kids.
What a screw job, though, to Tennessee. Tennessee thought at one point when they signed up for that deal, they thought at one point that they were really going to have a nice signature night. As it is, they're going to be in the ESPNU. They're going to be up against Michigan State and Boise State, and they're going to be playing on Friday night, which is really kind of sad, isn't it? I mean, like you just said. Hey, here's the worst part.
Again, I don't like the Friday night period, whoever's playing. But, you know, I know how this was going to come off, Tony, but it's Tennessee and NC State. You know, it's not like those two programs have been in the upper echelon of college football powerhouses over the last few years. In fact, you look at the records, they both struggled mightily in some cases. So the fact that they're getting a showcase game, period, you know, in Atlanta, when, yes, it's Friday, and yes, there's another game, but there's still going to be a lot of people watching. I think it's pretty good for both those programs where they are right now. If this is Tennessee circa mid-90s, if this is Tennessee circa 2001, it's a different story then. But this is Tennessee that's lost, what, they've had three losing seasons in the last 4 years? It's not your dad's or my dad's Tennessee. Tennessee's got to work its way back up before it's going to start hitting those primetime slots. Auburn won a national title 2 years ago. Okay?
What a screw
Clemson
job.
Played the BCS bowl game. Those two teams will play on Saturday night. Right now, they're more attractive nationally than Tennessee and NC State. And that's just the way it is.
You know, Chris, at the end of the day, there's just, in that move they made, there's no respect. There's no respect for the high school kids that play in the state of Georgia, the state of Tennessee, and all over the Southeast, and even the state of North Carolina. There's no respect for those two fan bases. And truthfully, if you're going to go to Atlanta and you want to get down there for the experience and to enjoy a weekend, you're going to check into your hotel, and you better get out of Dodge on Saturday, because I don't know where they're going to put all those people. You know, in that downtown area, I don't know how you accommodate four fan bases of people trying to get into that Georgia Dome. That sounds like a logistical, and I was just down there for on a typical Saturday night for the Atlanta Hawks Sixers game a couple weeks back, and it was crowded then. I can't imagine what it's going to be like with four fan bases overlapping, checking in and checking out, Chris. That just sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah, you know, at one point they talked about trying to do a doubleheader on one day. They just felt like logistically that was going to be impossible to do it. I think most people, you know, there'll be rooms because the Tennessee fans will be out, as you point out, on Saturday morning, and most of those Clemson, Auburn people will be coming in on Saturday. You know, Auburn's such a short drive. I mean, gosh, you can get from downtown Atlanta to Auburn's campus in an hour and 20 minutes. So I think a lot of those people, Tony, will drive in Saturday for the game and stay Saturday night. Tennessee fans and state fans will be cleared out of there. You know,
that's what I'm saying.
It's not ideal, but I still think for Tennessee to get a shot to open the season in Atlanta, in the Georgia Dome, where they've played so well over the years, on TV, it might not be ESPN or ESPN2, but it's still on a you know, station. You're going to be able to see it for the most part nationally. In a game that one of two that night, I mean, college football fans all over, and they're going to be tuned in. It's better, it's much better than playing Montana in Knoxville or play in Buffalo or Western Kentucky. I think it's much better than that. It's more exposure. It's a better team. It's a better test. We get a much better idea of where this Tennessee team is on a neutral, at a neutral site against a team that I think very comparable to Tennessee, but a team that Tennessee should beat.
If Tennessee's going to have a good year this year.
They got to win this game. I mean,
if you were installing
no
a line, if you were installing a line, what would you think that line's going to be for that game, Chris?
Tennessee by 3 or 4.
Well, I'll take that all day long.
But I'm jaded as you are, and we all are here at Knoxville because it doesn't have anything to do with these kids and this coaching staff. I know it doesn't. But my memory just won't let me get past the fact that Tennessee hasn't played a decent game in that building since they beat Mississippi State in 98 to win the SEC championship. I guess 04, excuse me, 07, when they outplayed LSU that game and Ames threw the pick six and that was that, but they played probably about as well as they could play in that game against a very good football team and lost. But other than that game, they played okay in 04 against Auburn. Auburn was just a better team, had more horses. But they played some real stinkers in that building too. And
I hate that building.
I'm just one of those who says, I gotta see them play well in that building before I feel real good that they're gonna win a game there.
I hate that building, Chris. That building wrecked my Eagle season this year. That building gave us a terrible WrestleMania last year. That building gave me a Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl championship when it first opened. That building disgusts me, Chris. That building is gross. It makes me sick. It's antiseptic. It's a great place to hold an SEC championship game. But I'll tell you this right now. That building has been unkind to Tony Basilio through the years. I mean, listen, we took a bus trip down and saw Tennessee play Auburn several years back, and Chris Lofton had to hit a three-pointer to beat a bad Auburn team. Tennessee went out there and sleptwalked through the SEC tourney.
They lost them. I've been there for several.
I'm telling you.
Tennessee Stickers in basketball. Even the Lady Vols, didn't they lose in the Final Four there one year?
Yes. You got to
maybe this is the year the Vols break that Georgia Dome curse, but I do think Tennessee is a team ready to make a move. They're older, they're more talented,
no question.
They've got more experience.
10 wins.
And I like the fact that they're playing a game of this nature to open the season, and you don't play a glorified scrimmage, and then all of a sudden, you know, 2 weeks later or whatever it is, you play Florida. Here's the other thing, you know, the stakes change a little bit this year too for Florida because
yes,
in past years they've always played a Florida Atlantic and a UAB and then play Tennessee. Well, this year they play at Texas A&M the second week of the season before they come to Tennessee. Tennessee will have had a test as well against NC State. So both of those teams would have been tested. Florida probably more so because they're going to go on the road, and you wonder playing the game that's without a doubt going to be a very physical, tough contest there in College Station. Then you have to come to Tennessee the next week. I think that's the Tennessee's advantage.
Chris, I'm going to share this with you. Saturday's Down South. I think this guy has a nice job, SaturdayDownSouth.com. And he throws up the rankings, schedule rankings, as he has them so far, just based on early projections for next year. Tennessee right now has the 10th toughest schedule, in his alleged opinion, next year in the conference. And as you said, that NC State game, Georgia State, which is a win, Florida here on September 15th, which should be a win, really, if you think about it now. I mean, they're due to win that game, and if you don't get it then, when are you going to get it?
But Tony, how long have you been saying they're due to be
I four? Know that. I know that. But there's a chance to come out of – there's a chance. There's a chance now to go to Georgia 4-0. There's a chance. And if you go to Georgia 2-2 – or 2-2, rather, you're dead meat. I mean, let's face the facts. There's a chance.
I'll say it. I'm going on record right now. Tennessee will not go to Georgia 2-2. They'll be
better.
They better
go down there.
I think they'll be 3-1.
They could enter 3-1, and they have a chance to have a nice season. The point is, though, the point he makes is when you break that schedule down, 7 home games, 4 road games, 1 neutral site game, that NC State game, 1 legit non-conference game, NC State, 3 cupcakes, 4 top 25 opponents as of early ESPN rankings, and you work for those folks, Chris, so we're going to trust them. You've got number 2 Alabama, Georgia a top 5 team, South Carolina a top 10 team, and Florida a fringe top 25 team slotted at 25 right now. And you do not have the heavyweight schedule you had last year. It's time for these guys to make a move. And I say 9 regular season wins, Chris, for this football team.
Yeah, you know, but does it ever work out? We all do it. My son does it. We sit down before the season and we go win, 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 loss, loss, win, win. It never works out the way you think it does. Here's a great example. Last year, as we looked at Tennessee's schedule, and I'm one of the ones who said this. I said, to me, the Vols start the season 6-0 because they don't have what you would call just a monster non-conference game. Now, Cincinnati was pretty good, and Tennessee ended up playing its best game of the year against Cincinnati when everybody was healthy. But the way I looked at their schedule last year, Tony, you know, Montana, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Middle Tennessee, all right, that's 4-0, okay? Then you looked at Kentucky, who'd lost their heart and soul with Randall Cobb and Derek Locke and all those guys. That's 5-0. And then Vanderbilt, with a first-year coach coming off 2 wins in each of the last 2 seasons, that's 6-0. So you're going into that season. We all were. You were. I was. Said Tennessee starts this year 6-0. They just got to find 1 or 2 wins somewhere along the way to really make this a success. Well, as it turns out, they didn't start 6-0 because they finished 5-7, and they let a receiver play a quarterback, beat him in Kentucky. So, again, I hesitate to say 9 wins. I hesitate to say anything because in this league, and we've all seen it, it never plays out the way you think it does. That said, I would be disappointed if Tennessee is not in a bowl game next year with a chance to win at least its 8th game in the postseason.
Our on-site engineer, Robbie Guest, just uncovered something about that Labor Day weekend. There's a NASCAR race in Atlanta that weekend as well. Let's see how many people we can jam into that little area.
Because the traffic's not bad enough.
Because
the
traffic's not bad enough there anyway. Chris,
also,
thank you.
The wrestling match in Gwinnett.
Well, that's, you know. Are you serious? Is there a house show there? Because I'm going to go to the...
Tony, wins Triple H or Undertaker WrestleMania?
Undertaker's streak will not be broken, but Triple H may put himself over because he's what we call family. He's related, as we say in the trade. Chris, I am really interested to see if Daniel Bryan will hold his title through WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan has really developed into a great old-school heel. I'm enjoying him. And little AJ, I'm enjoying him. Chris, thank you.
He's one of those guys that just, you know, if you saw him, there's no way he could be
right.
Beat up 90% of the guys he's wrestling.
Right, right. I love that.
Somehow he does, right?
It's an old school heel, right? And he always wins in like some really cheap way. Like
he's sort of the modern day Tully Blanchard. You know,
yes.
Tully Blanchard like that.
Yeah, totally unimpressive. Chris, thank you. Great talking with you.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.